Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is the IBMT? The Spanish Civil War, which began in July 1936 with a military coup that overthrew the democratically elected government of the Spanish Republic, is generally considered to be the precursor to World War II. Some even say it was its first battle. Volunteers from around 50 countries came to Spain to defend the government against Francisco Franco's fascists, who were supported by troops and weapons sent by Hitler and Mussolini. The Battle of the Jarama took place from February 6th to 27th, 1937, just east of Madrid, when Franco's army tried to dislodge the government troops and cut off access to the city. The Republic was largely defended by the international brigades, and the battle ended in a standoff, but not before there were very heavy losses. Every year, the Spanish Association of Friends of the International Brigades, the AABI, commemorates the battle with several activities, including a march to the site. Each year, there's a special tribute to volunteers from one of the countries, and this year, the Lincoln Brigade from the United States was honored. 3,000 volunteers fought in the Lincoln Brigade, and about a third of them were Jewish. Aside from the march, the AABI organized visits to other meaningful sites and sponsored a play written by Charles Nusser, one of the volunteers. Children and grandchildren of Brigadistas came for the tribute, and we spoke with some of them, who told us about their relatives' experiences and why it was important for them to participate in this commemoration. Kathy Cook, Anita Cariff, Doyle O'Connor, Kate Fogarty, Tim Parker, Linda Geiser, and Nancy Wallach participated in our roundtable discussion.
My name is Daniel Millstone. My father fought in the Lincoln Brigade. His name was George Millstone. My mother worked for a charity in Spain on behalf of the Republic that was part of Red Aid, which was the overall group that provided blankets and food and shelter for orphans and medical care. So both of them were in the Spanish Civil War and were deeply affected by it. And I grew up being taught about that, and so it made a very big difference to me. And one of the reasons it made a big difference to me was that they saw the war against Franco as the opening shots in the war against Hitler and Mussolini, that they saw the war coming, and that were it possible to defeat the fascists in Spain, they thought the war could be prevented.
Where were they from, your parents?
My mother was raised in Far Rockaway as a part of Queens. And my father's parents were living on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And as it happens, when he volunteered to go to Spain, he had been sent already to Birmingham, Alabama, to organize on behalf of the Communist Party, the steelworkers in Birmingham. And it was from there that he went to Spain. My mother was sent to Spain by the Communist Party into Paris to work on the charity in the Communist Party, and then sent to Spain to help run the charity there. As it happens, I grew up knowing and being in the same building as Charlie Nusser, and I knew Charlie and his then wife, Luba. There were several veterans of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in our apartment building as I was a young child.
When you were growing up, did you ever get involved with ALBA? You know, the archives of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in New York City?
I was, in general, not a person who wanted to be involved with the the veterans of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, which was the organization while there were still veterans around. I was a person who said, you know, that was their struggle. And I only got involved in recent years because a friend of mine suggested I come look at some other people who, and lo and behold, there were many people I knew as a child and many people I'd known as a teenager. And so I got sort of lured into it as an activity that I'm still quite new to, not used to it yet.
Can you tell us why you came here this year and what you think that you've gotten out of it?
Well, it was an accident that I came here this year. A friend of mine, Nancy Wallach, who's here with us today, came to a party at our house on the wrong day. And as a result, she was the only guest. And so we had a lot of time to talk, and she said, hey, I'm going to this trip. And I've been retired a long time, and I've discovered my pension keeps coming. And so I said, well, maybe I could afford to go. And the weird thing is, I then told my younger son, and he decided he would come. And then we both told my older son, and he decided he would come. And all of us then told my sister, and she and her husband decided that they would come. And so that it was a sort of chain migration. It's been a big educational experience for me, both learning how limited my Spanish is, always felt like I could speak it better in New York, and it's been an enormous benefit to me beginning to understand a little bit of the current politics in Spain and how they must have played out during the Spanish Civil War.
Hi, my name is Catherine Cook, and I'm from New York City. And my father, Gerald Cook, was a fighter in the Lincoln Brigade. And both of my parents, when they met, well, they met on a picket line in the 30s. They were organizing the department stores in New York City. And they were in the Communist Party. They were both communists. So, you know, I grew up with that when I was young. And I'll talk more about my father since he's the vet. Because my mother was like, I don't know. I don't think she was as into the whole thing as he was. But my father was a committed Marxist, dialectical materialist, communism, his entire life until he was on his deathbed. And I asked him at that point, I said, well, and that was in 1980. He died young. I said, well, I mean, don't you feel bad that, like, the new human being and the new world didn't come into existence in your lifetime? And he said, well, okay, it didn't come into existence in my lifetime, but it will. I mean, he was convinced we were going to have the dictatorship of the proletariat, everything. So anyway, he, as I said, he fought in Spain, and then he came home and he fought in World War II. But a big thing when I was growing up, like a teenager, we could never go to Spain. I mean, it was like, as long as Franco was alive, that was like, psh. And when I grew up, and I think even maybe in my 30s, anyway, ALBA existed then. And somehow they got hold of me. I mean, they got my name. So I always got communication from them. So that, you know, kept it alive for me. I've never gone on a trip like this before. For me, this is interesting. I am not an emotional person. In fact, I don't cry, and I think there's something wrong with me, but I'm not going to go into that. But this experience here, the last few days, I mean, at the play first, and then, you know, yesterday and today, I mean, I'm like crying. So this Spanish Civil War, I don't know it. And I also lived through the Vietnam and this and that. No other thing of that nature affects me like the Spanish Civil War. And I'm going to cry right now.
My name is Anita Cariff. I live in Chicago. I'm from New York. My cousin, Morris Tobman, was a member of the Abraham Lincoln Brigades, and I didn't know him that well. He died when I was 14. And I remember that my mother went to his funeral, and she came back. She didn't take me, and that was the first time I ever saw her cry, because she was very close with him, and she so respected what he had done. I have become very close with his three children, and I guess I got involved. I've always been really interested in this, and you asked, and I'm going to say why, you asked the question about why you think this has such an emotional pull on people. And I think for me it's because, and I'm kind of quoting the filmmaker John Sayles here, whenever I feel especially despondent about human beings, he said that when he feels that way, as people say, you know, and folks, when they ask me, you know, they say people are so selfish, they're only out for themselves, his response is, but what about the international brigades? And that, to me, sums it up, because it's amazing and incredibly, I don't know, honorable that thousands of people from all over the world chose to participate in a war that was not, you know, their particular battle at that time. And yet they understood what it meant, what it signified, and they made it their mission. And so that, to me, is incredibly moving.
My name is Doyle O'Connor, and the short answer for why I'm here is my wife brought me here because her cousin was a brigadista. The longer answer is I spent a career as a trade unionist in the United States and an anti-fascist organizer and frankly a street fighter against the Ku Klux Klan and the Nazi Party in the United States. And I'm in a situation where my country has chosen what I consider suicide in moving to a fascist form of government. And I'm looking in part for answers of how one resists when your own neighbors choose fascism. And I don't know how many answers I've gotten this weekend, but I came anticipating that it would in some ways make me more hopeful of the possibility of effective resistance.
Tim?
I first came here in 2011 with a group of people, including Nancy. And the reason that I came, I think, was that I realized late in my father's life how much Spain meant to him. And he recorded an album of Spanish songs when he was 71. Remembering the words to those songs with never having written them down for 40 years. So that told me how present in his mind all the time that he was doing the rest of his life, Spain still was. And so I came here because there were annual reunions in both in New York and in San Francisco, but because I lived on the West Coast, I went to the ones in San Francisco, and so I had gone to a number of those. You know, prominent people spoke at those. Angela Davis came to one, which much impressed my children to see Angela Davis. And I knew of Nancy Wallach because her parents and my parents were close friends, but I never met her. And the same thing with Josie Nelson. So it was an opportunity for me to meet people who I had heard about and also to honor my dad and his not so much commitment, but the presence of Spain in the way he looked at life. And I think that it was more than just having fought in the war here. I think it was that he fell in love with Spain. And so that's why I came.
I'm Kate Fogarty. I'm the granddaughter of Charles Neusser. And this is my first trip. It's my first time. And just to share, you know, I live currently in Florida, but I'm originally from New York. And I started experiencing things in my state also in higher education as an academic with tenure. And then I realized about 10 years ago, I started to explore my roots, and that included my grandfather's roots, his family. Some information was given to me. And I realized how little I valued it maybe as a child. You know, when I was 11, my grandfather brought me to Spain, and pretty much the highlight of it, though, was the people I met who I think were part of some organization when we were here. And they would speak Spanish with me and try to, you know, help me learn. And then there was a friend of his, Tom and Sylvia, or Sophia Entwistle, and I got to know them. And unfortunately, plans for this trip with his daughter, since Tom was like a son to him. Even though when you talk to Tom, you would think that Tom actually fought in the Spanish Civil War alongside him in some of the worst battles. And then I did get the chance to reconnect with Tom and then his daughter in 1994 after my grandfather had died. But it was really more, I didn't have an appreciation, I think, growing up for him. I mean, there was one time that I remember with my grandfather, it's very silly, but he loved children. He really loved youth, and his memoir that I've recently found and read shared about that. And I realized that, you know, here I am studying child development and youth development, and I think it's so important, and I think it's the key to the future, where adults are supporting and not suppressing youth, which fascism does the latter. I just remember my grandfather very much enjoyed my sister, and he enjoyed me, and he would sleep on the couch, pretend to sleep on the couch, and stick a clothespin on his finger that looked very pain. I would try it and I'd be like, ow. And he would just stick a clothespin on his finger and pretend to sleep. And I just thought that was, he had such tolerance for things. And I thought, how does he feel no pain? I don't know if that relates any to his experiences in the Spanish Civil War, but he certainly, you know, just coming here and fighting pretty much immediately. His only training was, you know, a rifle with three, you know, bullets to shoot into the hills, and then he went and fought. To me, it's quite remarkable. There was a recent trip I made to Guatemala, and it was a real eye-opening experience because I went with some very conservative people whom I actually agreed with maybe on certain religious spiritual principles, but on other principles, I was deeply offended and had to I got angry and left. And our guide on this trip was somebody I really befriended and helped me to appreciate my grandfather so much more, because he was talking about Central America and some of the conversations that came up with a very conservative group people was, because our guide had mentioned how he was a communist and had been seeking and recruiting. And people in our group were like, how could you ever be a communist? That's the most evil thing on earth. And I explained, and I started talking with Cristobal, and I said, well, actually, my grandfather was a communist, and he hated what Ronald Reagan was doing in the United States. And Cristobal was actually kind of surprised that there was anyone in the United States who would oppose Reagan or oppose the things that were going on in Central America. And he felt like, wow, I mean, you know, there's a connection there. And then I realized how much I appreciated my grandfather for that.
Nancy?
Tim mentioned earlier that very briefly that his father had, at age 71, made this record, which I believe was called At the Break of Dawn, Songs from a Spanish Prison. And when his father was visiting New York, because our parents were old friends, he came up to my parents. He said, I have a demo tape of a song, a thing I'm going to play soon. And my parents didn't have a record, well, they didn't have a cassette player, so they came up to my place and we listened to it. First of all, I believe he was the son of a cantor. He had the most beautiful beautiful voice. This was 71 years old. You would have thought it was a young man. And the songs from Max, from my father, you know, would tell me that Matt, they called him Maxie, but they said Max kept up people's morale in the prison by the songs he sang. So he recorded, they were housed on the same floor as the Basque prisoners, and so some of the songs he sang were the songs he heard the Basque people singing, and then some of the, were anything from Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, I think, the popular songs of the day that people wanted to hear, to things from his childhood, I think, a Yiddish folk song, Raisins and Mandlin. So those were the songs that, that he did a tremendous thing with his voice of keeping up people's morale in San Pedro. And then I was thinking of when Anita quoted the John Sayles speech. John Sayles, who was an honorary member of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade Archives, I believe it was the 50th anniversary of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, and I was there, and I remember him giving that speech, and it was so popular in its entirety that it's been printed in posters. And basically, you have to understand, this was the 80s. It was the age of greed is good, and the Reagan-Thatcher era. And so here was a guy, and he addressed the cynics. He said, but the cynics said, you lost. And interestingly, a couple of years ago, Megan Dobney, some of you may have met her today, she's the IBMT, I think, president or secretary, and she said to me, Nancy, are you coming to the IBMT thing this year? I said, I don't know, I'll book my... And she said, well, I have to know. And I didn't know why, because I was been there before, and maybe I said a few words about... The IBMT is the International Brigade Memorial Association, and that is the group that, similar to our veterans group, of course, they took up the mantle after the last veteran died, but it includes the British, the Irish, the Scottish, the Australians, and they hold an event every year in Jubilee Gardens, and it's an open-air event in London, and they do, that's their way, among other ways, of educating people, because it's an open-air event. And they, you can lay a wreath there. I've laid wreaths there in honor of the veterans, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. You can order it from them. And I said a few words, but so I didn't think anything when she said that. And it seems the reason she needed to know is they were printing flyers, and I was the keynote, along with somebody from ASER, the French organization, who flew over. So I thought, once I found out, I saw the flyer, I thought, what am I going to say, you know? So I thought about John Sayles' speech, and I really delivered it in its entirety, and I just said how, you know, he was actually, I think, the next generation after us, and so, you know, and I just said, you know, I hope we have more John Sayles, more generations. And what I thought was interesting is the people that came over to me afterwards, it included... A British person themselves whose father was in the International Brigades. And she said, I can understand how we felt the necessity to go over. You know, they were being bombed, whatnot. But she said, you were so far away, and that the fact that your parents had that kind of understanding and understood the necessity of it, you were not an immediate, you know, so far, except for maybe internal fascism. But she said that here was somebody whose own father was in the British Battalion, and goodness knows the sacrifices they made, admiring the Americans because of the fact that they, these guys, these young guys, had the understanding when they were so far away, and that just stayed with me. So I wanted to share that.
Linda?
One of my objectives coming here was not only to learn the history, but to find somebody or some people here fluent in Spanish, meaning Spanish people, who would help me on a project to translate my dad's book into Spanish, because right now it's only available in English, and it's part of Spanish history too, understanding these internationals who came to fight in Spain And so I was asking around, and we went to a play on Thursday of Charles Neusser, of Kate's grandfather, that had been translated, wonderfully translated into Spanish. The audience just packed the hall, and they were so responsive to this play that had been written in English originally. And so it was a wonderful translation. And I was introduced to the translator, Andreas Chamorro, and he was interested in helping. And then I discovered that he actually knew my father, and that I actually already knew of him. My father, when he was 95, in a wheelchair, like I said, very tough, at 95, traveled 17 hours on United Airlines from the West Coast to attend a reunion in Spain. And when he got here, the Amigos, the Association of Friends of the International Brigades, assigned to him two young Spanish men to help him during the trip. And they stayed by his side, and they treated him so wonderfully. And when he came back, he couldn't stop talking about them, how kind they were to him, how much they helped him, and especially how strong they were, because he couldn't believe that they could just lift him up, just the two of them could lift him up in his wheelchair to get through a doorway or whatever was needed. And you know what it is that I'm leading to, which is that one of those young men was Andreas, this translator who did such a fantastic job with Kate's grandfather's script. So I am just so pleased. And Andreas said that his time with my father was very influential for him, because he was very young at that time, I think just 20 or something like that. So making this reconnection and having somebody like that who was already tied to my dad to help me translate this book, very meaningful.
Well, thank you all very much. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com. I'll leave you now with Harama Song, which was one of the songs recorded by Tim's father, Max Parker, and can be found on his album, Alto Cardiana, at break of dawn. See you next week.
There our brave comrades fell with the rest of the international column, and the fight for Madrid that they made, where we fought like true sons of the soil, that fascism never should reign. Now we're leaving this valley of sorrow, and its memories we ne'er shall forget. So before we continue this reunion, let us stand to our glorious dead.